abrasive, slurry stuff, and you turn it on, and you just leave it running, you know, for a really long time, I guess, days or something. And the rocks tumble around in there, rubbing each other with this, you know, abrasive in the mix too. And they gradually become shiny and smooth. And I was thinking, it's interesting how much we like the shiny and smooth rocks more. Why are they so much more appealing and pretty to us? We don't like the rough and the uneven. And yet we are pretty rough and uneven, you know. So maybe that's why each of us is here, to polish out some of our rough edges. Our reactivity, our doubts, the unevennesses in us, you know, the funkiness in us. And I think at first when you hear about this kind of stuff, Zen, meditation, spiritual growth, whatever stuff it is that you heard about, maybe at first we didn't quite get this rubbing business. That's not in the initial brochure. I think at first it sounds like, even though you're a pretty rough rock, you ought to be able to just sit down on a nice cushion and just sort of gradually become smoother and shinier, just kind of like automatically or something. Or maybe we think, maybe not automatically, but if I kind of arrange the rock in the right way, or maybe if I hear the right instructions, you know, the right teachings and stuff, then I'll get smoother and more polished and prettier. And maybe, you know, that works in some other system. It might. I'm not discounting that. I'm not saying our way is the only way. But, you know, and it seems like there's plenty of stories of really rough-looking rocks that sit down and, in a poof of something, become really smooth and shiny and sell books and do workshops. But it doesn't, you know, doesn't seem to work that way for us. We seem to really need each other. And we need to be in the rock tumbler together, not just on our own. And I think what's hard is there's a period, probably quite a long period, where those two visions are kind of colliding too, you know, those are rubbing together. And you're kind of like, hey, what's with you? Why are you interfering with my practice? I'm sitting here trying to do it all right, and you're causing trouble for me, you know. You're not smooth enough or something, you know. And I was thinking, well, it's not just the rocks in the tumbler, which is what I first heard, you know. It's also that they put in this abrasive slurry stuff. That's important. Otherwise, probably the rocks would just crack or just bang into each other all night. The machine's not that loud either. It's kind of rum, rum, rum. But probably without the little slurry, it'd be like, pop, 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 pop. And you could never sleep and you'd turn it off again. We need the slurry stuff. So I thought, well, maybe the teachings are the slurry stuff. And I'm probably going to abuse this metaphor a good bit, but maybe that idea, that kind of intermediate idea, well, it's like, well, it's not just me sitting here. I need the right teachings, the right teacher, the right practices, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's kind of like just pouring this slurry stuff on your head. But it doesn't really do anything, you know. This kind of makes you all goopy. You may be proud of your goopiness, you know. But it's not the same as shininess. You just might think it is. That we still need the others. And we need their rough edges to meet our rough edges. For us to little by little get a little smoother. And then I was realizing, well, it's not just interpersonal, you know, between us, although that's certainly huge, you know, obviously this morning, right? We're practicing it quite obviously this morning. But also the way that we're internally like multiple me's, right? You know that. So we're also our own rock tumblers, you know, that when we make a mistake, and that's the reason why we receive this complicated form, is so we can make lots of mistakes. One reason anyway. And we want the whole form to be really pretty and polished too, of course, you know. That rubs us the wrong way when it's not. But anyway, you make a mistake and then you have part of you that is the one who made the mistake and part of you that's embarrassed by the mistake. So they're rubbing together, you know, right, inside you. And that this is can be really uncomfortable, right? But it's also, this is a process. It's how we heal and grow, is to let that rubbing go on. And then we realize, oh, well, somehow this is all okay. Somehow this is all exactly the way it needs to be. So maybe that's the internal slurry, you know, in between these rough edges of self rubbing against self. I should be better, you know, I should be smarter. He already told me that 3 times. How could I have done that wrong again? Blah, 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 blah. That if it's just that, you know what I mean? If it's just the self that's embarrassed to be who you are, and the self that thinks you're different, or, you know, the self that thinks you should be different, sorry. And you don't have the slurry internally. Some degree of faith, trust, appreciation, something. That this actually is how it needs to go. You know what I mean? Mm. Then it's just rocks banging around inside you, right? And you're just going to get cracked and broken. So it's not automatic. I think there is something here that we turn and shift, you know, as we sort of pour the slurry in our cracks and coat ourselves with it and again go quickly find somebody to rub up against, you know. Oh, that hurts so good, right? Occasionally we're in harmony about this, and that's pleasant, right? That's pleasant. When we're in harmony about this, we have an understanding that we can each recognize, and we can say, well, that's a little uncomfortable, but we both appreciate each other, and this is a good process, a good project. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. But fortunately, that's relatively rare. You know, more often, one of us appreciates it one way, and one of us appreciates it another way, and it's a little more like, you should really have this down by now. Or even worse, right? I should have this down by now. So anyway, it's not so easy. And we all, me included, for sure, have lost plenty of sleep and read and written plenty of unfortunate emails. And had many difficult conversations. And even though I think we have all come to appreciate each other, you know, a lot, whether you've been in this particular rock polisher for 30 years or just showed up today, I think we do appreciate each other still. Even when the slurry kind of is working and the process is working, there's these little dry areas, I think, you know, and we get tripped up, you know. We carry these judgments that are uncomfortable. And yet, little by little, I think it's inevitable. You know what I mean? Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Little by little, if we stay in the polisher, we understand that it's just the way it needs to be. And our rough edges are just the rough edges we needed, and our community needed, and our friends needed, and our, sadly, ex-friends needed, you know. But somehow it's all as it needs to be. And we can be grateful, even when there's trouble. And speaking of grateful, I was feeling really grateful after a while, last night, after a period of ungratefulness, because I was thinking about this talk, which I had not had much time to prepare in advance, which is a rough edge on me, I guess. I don't usually prepare the talks in advance as maybe I could. And I remembered, I haven't given a formal talk in a while, the different things happened this summer, And I remembered I had made a commitment to myself about the talks, and a public commitment, that I vowed to give talks on all 48 koans in the Mumonkan Koan collection. That slipped out of my mind. And I was like, oh, I got to give a talk tomorrow. And there's like this big ordination going on, and I should probably try to say something about that. You know? I'm like, oh, no, I'm supposed to do this koan thing. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll get lucky. And the koan will be, like, relevant. And it'll help me, you know. Because how do you talk about ordination anyway? Who understands that, you know? So I couldn't remember which one I was on. I looked it up, and I'm on number 17. So here is case number 17. The national teacher called his attendant three times. Three times his attendant responded. And the teacher said, I was about to say that I was ungrateful to you, but the fact is that you are ungrateful to me. Right, yeah, exactly. God, no. Coarse language came out of my mouth. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? Ungrateful? So I thought about skipping it. Even though I pretty much admit I'm in the polisher most of the time, sometimes I think, well, maybe I could just jump out of the polisher for a little while and, you know, clean up a little bit. I'll jump back in later, you know, I'm committed to this life, but, you know. But I said, no, trust the process, and what time you have left before bed, you know. Meanwhile, my wife wanted to hang out. She's like, are you almost done in there? Which makes me think of one time, many years ago, and it was about ordination, actually. Norman was talking to a group of us who had ordained, and we had this little study group that we get together with him. And he said something like, at the time, his wife, Kathy, was taking a very long hiatus from Zen, and she wasn't too interested at that moment in formal Zen practice. And he said, don't think you're something special, and, you know, you shouldn't just take care of your ordinary life. My wife does not think it's special that I'm a Zen priest. She still wants me to, you know, do the dishes, take out the trash, take care of the relationship. So anyway, it's nothing special. And my wife wanted to hang out, so I had to finish the talk. So I said, okay, well, let's see what I can do here. So I thought, yeah, just trust the process. Maybe there's something valuable in this strange little story from the ancestors. The national teacher calls his attendant three times. Three times his attendant responded. The teacher said, I was about to say that I was ungrateful to you. Fact is that you are ungrateful to me. Well, I read a commentary. That was a little bit helpful. Started to have a kind of a glimmer. And then somehow my mind worked on it all night. I had a weird and interesting night where I woke up every hour or two and I checked the time. And then I was so happy there was still more time to sleep. And I went back to sleep and I kept being happy every time I woke up. It was interesting. So, I don't know, somehow things were processing. And I realized that actually, no, this is a very good story for us today. To really think about, what do we really need? Do we need everyone to be grateful to us all the time? What does it mean to call and respond? What do they mean by ungrateful as a value? Now, seeing that ordination, which is really kind of a great public commitment, actually, to just stay in the rock tumbler for the rest of your life, is kind of what this story is about. That first, it's about calling and responding. The teacher calls, the attendant responds. And they say that our practice is mostly about showing up, and sometimes there's different percentages given. 90% showing up, 99, I don't know. But I think it's really true. Mostly it's about showing up, which basically means hopping in the rock tumbler, you know? Staying in there. You like it or not, you know, you feel like it or not, showing up. But that when we show up, it's not just like we're showing up. We're doing a pretty big thing, actually, I think. When we show up, we're really calling out to the world, saying, "Here I am. Here I am. This is my understanding of this life so far. Me." And whether we do that in an out loud kind of way, some of us are more out louders than others, that doesn't matter so much. The calling out is not just verbal or something. It's the calling out of just taking a step forward, of just walking the door, of just being present. And that somehow when we do that, we call like the whole world into existence. And our stepping forward, I think, is really big. You know, we diminish ourselves so much. Like, oh, it's just little old me, and those other people are the champion rock tumblers, you know. But no, I think every time we call, every time we show up, it's pretty big. Partly because whenever you call, the others respond. That we're all calling and responding to each other all the time. It takes so many forms, you know. It's so ubiquitous, sometimes we don't even notice. I see you, you know, I feel you, I know you. And that I help bring you into existence when I respond to your call. We are co-creating something really big and vast and deep. It's the whole everything, you know. So our responding is so powerful. And I think we can never underestimate how powerful this calling and responding we're doing all the time is. And our training encourages us, of course, to, you know, little by little refine this a little bit, you know, pay attention. How are we calling? How are we responding? A little bringing more awareness to that, feeling it more. What is really needed here? What does the world need? What does this being that I call me seem to need? What do the others seem to need? What's helpful? What would really be helpful here? As I show up and respond to the others doing their best to show up. So that's our practice of precepts. And in the ordination ceremony, the ordinees will take the precepts anew, you know. They're really committing themselves to being mindful of how this all works, calling and responding. Even as they understand that they'll never quite get it right. Because of their rough edges, you know. So in this story, we see this process of calling and responding personified, you know, between two beings, a teacher and a student, which is the way it's usually personified in the Zen stories. This great archetype, you know, the wise teacher, the earnest student. And we are always playing with that archetype here, you know, that's why we have color coding and stuff like that, you know. To empower that archetype. Just remember, next time you get caught by it, it's just more slurry, you know? Brown slurry isn't necessarily better than blue slurry, or black slurry, or green slurry, you know? Sorry about the metaphor abuse. And sometimes, of course, we're going to just cause trouble, we get the thing upside down because at that moment we are turned upside down in our rock tumbler, you know. How do we think we're going to always see straight, you know? Ridiculous expectations we have sometimes. But little, we're more aware, you know. We're more clear about what's going on here and what really helps. And of course, a lot of times what really helps is less, right? Is less. Say less, do less. give more space. The other rocks in the tumbler have to tumble in their own ways, you know? It's not up to us to try to organize their tumbling and make it work a little better. No, 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 rub this side more. No, 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 this one. I don't want to rub that one, you know? So the teacher called three times and the student responded three times. And three here doesn't mean three, exactly. It means 300, 3,000, 3 million times calling and responding. It means infinite, you know? A lifetime of calling and responding. And one of the things that's cool about personifying this process as a teacher and a student is it shows a couple of things. It shows willingness, and it shows compassion. You know? The teacher is willing and compassionate enough to hang in there with the student forever, you know. I will just keep calling as long as you need to be called. But we got to be careful not to see this as a one-directional setup. That's, I think, a common fault in how we look at these stories. The wise teacher, the earnest student. Actually, the earnest student is calling the teacher into existence, too. Through the student's incredible willingness and compassion. As long as the circumstance seems to be that you need to be the teacher, I will help call you into existence, you know. I'll do my part as best I can. And this is especially really true, I think, in priest practice, in our style of tumbling. It's the Sangha that really calls forth the priest, you know, that makes the priest the priest. Lots of other factors are required, of course, you know, the person who we're now going to say, she's a priest, he's a priest. That person has to have done a lot of stuff, practiced and studied for years, decades is best. They must have built a relationship, you know, with a teacher who is empowered to do the ceremony. It all works within Sangha life, of course, and the person has to make a big, big commitment and do lots of stuff, sew the robes, which is not nothing, believe me. It's a wonder that Yuan's fingers didn't fall off. But these are just some of the factors. You know, getting through the ceremony doesn't make you a priest. I mean, you're like a proto-priest or something. Like sort of formless slurry or something at that point, you know? Because you're not really a priest until the Sangha calls you forth, you know? Till your friends and colleagues on the way, wherever you find them, whether you find them in the Zendo or somewhere else, where they trust you and believe in you and support you and help you take whatever shape you're going to take as a priest. So what we'll do, like this key step today with Ewan and with Kate, but then we just have to see, you know, what shape we collectively create with them and for them. Sometimes another way the thing can go a little sideways is you might think that the ordaining teacher is outside of the rock polisher. Obviously that's not true, but let's just say that you had that misapprehension. But the ordaining teacher is outside the rock polisher and is just looking to see which ones are shiny enough. Oh, that one's pretty shiny. And picking the shiniest ones to give this special designation to. Not so much. I think what's interesting here in somebody requesting ordination and granting that request or inviting that request is not that how shiny they are, but how willing they are, you know, how willing they are. You know, how willing they are to just stay in the polisher, stay in the soup. And that's what I love about Norman's, you know, now famous, because I talk about them, and he forgot about these 3 points for a while. Famous 3 points, sorry, I'm talking out of order a little bit. Norman said to me and a couple of colleagues when he was ordaining us, he'd had this brainstorm that the three key practices of a priest are as follows. Be humble, see everyone as a Buddha, see everyone as Buddha, and try to help. Where was I going with that? I'm off script here. Hold on a sec. Oh, is that you don't have to be particularly smooth or rough to practice this way, you know? It's your willingness. It's just your willingness to be humble, to stay in the polisher, recognize we're all in the polisher, see everyone as Buddha. So Buddha's grand design somehow is that we are these rough rocks, you know, each of us the same. Within our rough exterior, this incredible shine, you know. Maybe we won't see it for a long time. And try to help here is not so much, hey, did you know you're stuck in a rock polisher and the exit's over there? You'd be much happier if you got out of here. But to say, you know, it's hard in here, isn't it, you know? And it's beautiful, too. And we're all in this together. Aren't we lucky? Ouch! So anyway, sometimes the rocks that we ordain are not the smoothest, but the roughest, you know? And also the other thing here is, since it's a lifetime commitment or maybe a multi-lifetime commitment, these are the ones who really say out loud, and they'll say that this afternoon, even if I get so damn tired of this polisher, I'm staying in. I'm staying in for the benefit of everybody, because it's what's needed, it's what I need, it's what we all need. So call and response makes some kind of sense. But then this strange thing that the teacher says, when he really understands that the attendant has really responded, you know, really is responding fully, the teacher says, I was about to say I was ungrateful to you, but the fact is that you are ungrateful to me. Ungrateful. This is weird, because don't we think the whole thing is actually about gratitude? Well, yes, of course it is about gratitude. But I was grateful to this weird story to help remind me that it's more than something we can name. It's more than a word we can, a concept that we can put into words like grateful. Because when we hear the word grateful, we think of its opposite, ungrateful, not grateful. And we could easily run our life, you know, endlessly running in circles, trying to find people who will be grateful to us, you know, trying to find people who will take care of us and feed us. And we need all this. But if that's all we think we are, we're really stuck. I don't know how to use my metaphor there, but we're really stuck. So this ungrateful is the same creative use of negation that we chanted in the Heart Sutra, where it talks about know this, know that. You notice that. It's to remember that there is a life that's deeper and wider than grateful or ungrateful. Deeper and wider than happy and sad. Deeper and wider than good job, bad job. There's our life that's in the rock polisher and beyond the rock polisher. There's our life where it's okay no matter what's happening. In the Heart Sutra, it even negates the Four Noble Truths that Chris spent hours exploring with us all through August. But it's not negating the Four Noble Truths, which are so lovely and important to understand our suffering and the way our clinging makes suffering happen, and that we can liberate from this with the good practices and a path. these strange negations, ungrateful, no path. They help us to remember that life is broader and deeper than any system, you know, than any metaphor, than any idea. And that our very ideas of rough and smooth are part of a big problem for us, you know. So when the teacher's saying, I was about to say I was ungrateful to you, maybe he's saying something like, I was realizing I was going to have to clue you in that there's a life beyond gratitude and non-gratitude, that there's a life beyond yes and no, that there's a world beyond this and that, something deeper, broader, more complete than anything you can know. Maybe the teacher's saying, I was really bummed, I've been calling you all these years and I was going to have to explain it. But now I see I don't have to explain it. Now you've responded. And you are ungrateful to me. Wonderful, wonderful. You're liberated from this need for my gratitude, for anybody's gratitude. For people telling you you're doing it right. For people telling you you're okay. You're free just to be and to operate in this wide, beautiful world. So isn't that great? I'm so grateful that you're ungrateful to me. So it's a weird way of talking, you know. But, you know, when they land, and I'm probably not explaining it that well, because all I have at my disposal is my limited words, and it was a lot more clear at 2 a.m. when I woke up happy, you know. than it seems to be now. So I can kind of feel the tumbler tumbling me a little bit here. So maybe what I'm trying to say is let's appreciate being stuck in the rock tumbler at the same time that we understand, just deep in our bones, there's no rock tumbler. There's no rough edges. Neither is there a smooth and perfect anything. Out of compassion and wisdom, we received a format and a way to practice and a way to explore all this and some language and some strange old stories, you know. Some forms like priest, not priest, you know, precepts. The intention of the whole thing is, as we say, to go beyond. Gate, gate, you know, paragate. Parasamgate bodhisvaha, you know, beyond, go all the way beyond. Awakening, bodhi is awakening. Svaha is like, yes! So will we rub each other the wrong way sometimes? Yes, of course. How would you think otherwise? And isn't that great? Isn't that great? I'm ungrateful. And I hope you are too. I better stop there. Thank you.
Yeah.